"Take me back," he said. "I beg you, take me back to the landing craft. Let me undo what was done. A word from me and it can be undone. The repairs properly made. The landing craft can then return to the main ship. We can be on our way. My torment will be extinguished and I will cease to be a burden to you. I beg you." There was a short silence while his plea hung in the air. "But that can't work," Kennet said, Richard. "If we do that, then this won't have happened. Don't we generate all sorts of paradoxes?" Reg stirred himself from thought. "Oh, no worse than many that exist already," he said. "If the universe came to an end every time there was some uncertainty about what had happened in it, it would never have got beyond the first picosecond. And many, of course, don't. It's like a human body, you see. A few cuts and bruises here and there don't hurt it. Not even major surgery if it's done properly. Paradoxes are just the scar tissue. Time and space heal themselves up around them, and people simply remember a version of events which makes as much sense as they require it to make. That isn't to say that if you get involved in a paradox, a few things won't strike you as being very odd, but if you got through life without that already happening to you, then I don't know which universe you've been living in, but it isn't this one." "Well, if that's the case," said Richard, "why were you so fierce about not doing anything to save the Dodo?" Reg sighed. "You don't understand it at all. The Dodo wouldn't have died if I hadn't worked so hard to save the coelacanth." "The coelacanth? The prehistoric fish? But how could one possibly affect the other?" "Ah, now there you're asking. The complexities of cause and effect defy analysis. Not only is the continuum like a human body, it's also very like a piece of badly put-up wallpaper. Push down a bubble somewhere, another one pops up somewhere else. There are no more dodos because of my interference. In the end, I imposed the rule on myself because I simply couldn't bear it any more. The only thing that really gets hurt when you try and change time is yourself." He smiled bleakly and looked away. Then he added, after a long moment's reflection, "No, it can be done. I'm just cynical because it's gone wrong so many times. This poor fellow's story is a very pathetic one, and it can do no harm to put an end to his misery. It happened so very, very long ago on a dead planet. If we do this, we will each remember whatever it is that has happened to us individually. Too bad if the rest of the world doesn't quite agree. It'll hardly be the first time." Michael's head bowed. "You're very silent, Dirk," said Richard. Dirk glared angrily at him. "I want to see this ship," he demanded. In the darkness, the red telephone receiver slipped and slid fitfully back across the desk. If anybody had been there to see it, they might just have discerned a shape that moved it. It shone only very faintly, less than with the hands of a luminous watch. It seemed more as if the darkness around it was just that much darker, and the ghostly shape within it like thickened scar tissue beneath the surface of the night. Gordon grappled one last time with the recalcitrant receiver. At length, he got a final grip and slipped up onto the top of the instrument. From there, it fell back onto its rest and disconnected the call. At the same moment, the ghost of Gordon Way, his last call finally completed, fell back to his own rest and vanished.